today the theme for our reflection is on joy, and in the past few weeks I was going back and forth and assessing the songs of Christmas, these Christmas carols, and I was struck to see how many of them actually talks about joy. And that's because joy obviously is a huge part of the Christmas narrative, the Christmas story. And we know that joy itself is a big part of just the season in general. You see that in advertisements, in songs, in movies. Christmas is all about joy. And I think it's a great privilege that we get to talk about joy today as well. So in the text that Valine has read out for us, it talks about the well-known nativity scene, the Christmas story that we have all read, I'm sure, and year after year we visit and revisit. And I think for want of time, I will not be narrating or going through the events that exactly happened. I think, but I do want to encourage you to, in the next, if you haven't done so, to go back and read for yourself or with your family the story of Christmas, how it happened, the characters in the story, their words and the actions and all that. And I think even as we look forward to Christmas Day, I think it's really a powerful and remarkable moment in history, as we all know. And it's a story worth visiting and revisiting year after year. It's never exhausted, even though we look at it every year. So I encourage you to do that. But for today's reflection in particular, I want to, in the first part, consider a few characters from Luke chapter 2 and essentially their experience of joy in the birth of Jesus. And these characters are the shepherds and two other characters that are not necessarily connected to Christmas, and they are Simeon and Anna. And we see these two characters in the later part of chapter 2, which we will read later. But we want to begin with this question for these characters, for the shepherds and for Simeon and for Anna. What was it that brought them joy? What brought them joy? Why were they joyful? For the shepherds, we know how the story went. They were out in the fields and the angels appeared to them in a dramatic fashion. And the angels brought them the good news, sang probably a choir piece or something. And they experienced this remarkable moment, this event. And we could say that itself is enough to make you excited, right? Like to see, I mean, just think about going to a concert with the artist that you love. I mean, that's enough. It's a matter of excitement, a matter of joy. But we find that what ultimately gave them the joy was for them to actually go and see for themselves, right? Real manifestation of Jesus as a baby. And they said to one another, let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has been told to us. And they went and they saw the baby, and they saw the baby wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And then they were filled with even more sense of wonder, sense of joy, and they rejoiced. The text tells us that they went home rejoicing. Simeon and Anna, I think this one is worth just looking through in a little detail. So I'm going to share the text for us, and then we can. So Simeon and Anna, I hope you can see the text from here. It's a bit small, but I'm going to read through and then you can follow me along. In Luke chapter 2, verse 25, we are told about these two characters. And it's written like this, Luke chapter 2, 25. Now there was a man in Jerusalem called Simeon, who was righteous and devout. He was waiting for the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was on him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not die before he had seen the Lord's Messiah. Moved by the Spirit, he went into the temple courts. When the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what the custom of the law required, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God, saying, Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace, for my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles, and the glory of your people Israel. The child's father and mother marveled at what was said about him. And then we read about Anna. There was also a prophet Anna, the daughter of Penuel, of the tribe of Asher. She was very old. She had lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage, and then was a widow until she was 84. She never left the temple, but worshipped night and day, fasting and praying. Coming up to them at that very moment, she gave thanks to God and spoke about the child to all who were looking forward to the redemption of Jerusalem. So here we see these two characters, Simeon and Anna, and we see them beholding Jesus, the baby, and we see them at the end of this, they were filled with joy, and they rejoice at the sight of Jesus. And we get the sense that there's a lot of things that we could talk about with regard to Simeon and Anna, but we notice that their excitement was based on Christ as bringing redemption. Redemption of Israel, redemption of the Gentiles, redemption of Jerusalem. And it's almost as if this moment was what they had been longing for all these many years. The text tells us Simeon was in the temple, Anna was in the temple, worshipping day and night, fasting and praying, lamenting, longing, and just anticipating some moment that's supposed to come. And it was almost as if when they saw Jesus, that moment was fulfilled for them. And we see them beholding Jesus and they're like, that's it, that's enough. For me, this is joy. I've seen it with my eyes. And so it brings to us the question, what is so evocative about Jesus in a manger? What is so evocative about the Lord coming in the form of a baby? What is the meaning of this sign that Luke chapter 2 verse 12 tells us? You will find a baby wrapped in clothes and lying in a manger. What is so powerful about this that evokes so much joy in the shepherds, in Simeon and in Anna? And I think that's the question that I want to dwell on this morning. As I reflected on this, I discovered that their joy was connected to these two things that I've listed here. One is, it's connected to redemption, Jesus as bringing redemption. And also it's connected to Jesus being the incarnation. These are two big theological words, but I think in its essence, they're very simple. Redemption and incarnation. And I would just invite you to think along with me as we dwell on this a little bit. Okay, redemption, firstly. Redemption is essentially the concept, the theology that Jesus brings restoration and solution, to put it very simple. And joy is tied to redemption because joy is tied to knowing that Jesus brings redemption, right? Jesus brings a solution to a problem. So in the Bible, we see this broadly categorized as redemption of the world, of people, but not just people, of nations, of ethnicity, ethne, right, in Greek, and of creation, of the whole of creation. We talked about this briefly last week as well. The experience of deliverance, the anticipation of salvation is the reason for rejoicing. And at this point, we can argue and say that the shepherds, Simeon and Anna, they probably did not know the full extent of what redemption means. And that's fair enough. But what they knew is that Jesus is the fulfillment of God's promise to bring restoration, to bring peace, victory, redemption of persons, of relationships, peace in this world, shalom, peace in this world, and to usher in a time of peace and goodwill. And the very fact that the shepherds and Simeon and Anna were able to see this thing happening in front of them with their own eyes, that was what gave them joy in their hearts. And I think, to put it in an emotion that connects with us probably, it's the sense of fulfillment. I know how exciting it is to wait for a delivery to come, and when it comes, when it arrives, it fills me with so much excitement. And we can imagine that hundredfold, thousandfold maybe, the delivery, a solution to the problem that we've been waiting for. And in the age of COVID-19, obviously the example that connects with us is a solution to this pandemic. We all long for some kind of a solution to come to this situation that we are facing for almost a year now. We look forward to when things can go back to normal, things can be restored. And perhaps that emotion is what the shepherds and Simeon and Anna were experiencing as well. A solution. The details may not be clear. We may not know how it may work out, but they knew that the birth of Christ inaugurates the fulfillment of this solution. Because let's think about it, and if I may be a bit blunt, if there's no solution to life's problems, sin, right, alienation from God, alienation from life, or alienation from one another, if there's no solution to all that's going on, political strife or suffering in this world, sickness, and most ultimately, if there's no solution to death, right? Yes, we can still have joy, but to me, it seems almost too existential and momentary. Joy would be too focused on the now, only on the here and now. Would I dare to be joyful if I know that there's no solution? I'm not sure. I don't know if I'm brave enough to say that I can dare to be joyful. But if there is a solution, if there's indeed a solution, if there is a way of redemption, what if I'm not fated to this destiny of death and disease and decay? What if there's a solution to this? And I think that is where real joy can come in, knowing that there is a solution, there is redemption, whatever it is that you fill in the blanks for. What if that we are not fated to some destiny of fill in the blanks? And I feel like that's what the shepherds were experiencing here. They were filled with joy because they realized that there is ultimately a solution. And so redemption is a sign that we can dare to be joyful. We can dare to be joyful. But also it means Jesus coming as a baby symbolizes incarnation. And incarnation essentially, to put it simply, is the fact that Jesus came in the form of a human being, as a baby, in flesh and blood, like the rest of us. And to put it very, very briefly, incarnation shows us that joy is not some abstract idea up there with some gods in heaven, far away where it's distant and we look as an ideal and look wistfully from a distance. No, incarnation means that joy has come here in this earth. And it means that joy has the inbreaking of joy, the inbreaking of peace and love into the concrete realities of our life. Not far away in some distant land, but here on earth. And so, if that is so, if God has affirmed human existence, if God has affirmed this world, and if joy is actualized, then I see it this way. Joy is not to be found by avoiding life. And I think that's something that my generation and probably the younger generation is probably prone to do, by avoiding life, because life is too painful. I would prefer to be numb. I would prefer to be indifferent to what's going on in the world. Or to put it in a more biased language, to renounce the world, to renunciation. I renounce because all these things are illusion. These things are not real. You know, if I wouldn't get too badly hurt by the reality of life, and so I renounce whatever it is that is part of this world. But if Christ is the incarnation, then we can bravely embrace life. If Christ is born as a baby in flesh like the rest of us, and if Christ has redeemed all of creation, then we can embrace life, and we can confront all of life with all the goods, the bads, the uglies, with all the mess, with all the joys. We can embrace all of that, and we can live and be joyful. So the incarnation tells us that joy can be a reality. And so these are just two things, but redemption shows us that joy, we can dare to be joyful. The incarnation shows us that joy can be a reality. So I want to suggest two ways we can practice joy. There are more than two ways, I'm sure, but just these two ways that comes out of this reflection. And by the way, I think joy is something to practice. Joy is something that we do intentionally. It's not something we wake up to, as though we wake up and ask, am I joyful today? No, I'm not joyful today. No, it's not something that we fall into. Joy is something that we practice and we intentionally do. And I think that's why in the Bible, it's always written in the imperative, rejoice in the Lord always, be joyful. It's always in the imperative. So it's something that we intentionally put on. So there are two ways we can practice joy, especially in Christmas, let's say. And the first point, I tried hard to come up with a nice title, but very hard, so I'm just going to put it, Jesus, the Light of the World. And what I mean here is something along the lines of what C.S. Lewis said. C.S. Lewis said, I believe in God like I believe in the sun. Not because I see the sun, but because I see everything else because of the sun. And in the same way, think about it in terms of joy. We can enjoy this world, everything that is there in this world, family, food, feasting, warmth, all that stuff. We can enjoy them because of Christ, because Christ is the light that makes all these things enjoyable, ultimately. In light of Christ's incarnation, everything else in life is infused with meaning, infused with purpose and worth. When we say focus on Jesus during Christmas, we don't mean to be sitting and staring at just the baby, even though that is well worth it. I think when we say we are thankful for sunrise, we don't mean we want to look direct into the sun the whole morning. No, I think what we mean is that we enjoy the things around us that sunlight brings. And I think that's what enjoying the blessings of Christ means. Because of Christ's coming, we can enjoy everything else around us. Earthly joys, material needs, health, food, and again, list on and on. These things become enjoyable and meaningful because of the Christ who is the light of the world. He has made everything alive. He has made everything meaningful. And so that's the first thing to practice, to look at things from the light of the world. Secondly, the second way we can practice joy is to follow what the shepherds did, and which is they said to one another, let us go to Bethlehem and see this thing. And I think this is something that we can do as well. Sometimes, if we're honest with ourselves, sometimes we know that there's endless needs, endless wants in life. Sometimes we realize that we don't have as much things in our lives as others. Our views are not that great. The sun is up, but it's cloudy in my world. And there are things that are not as great and that detracts our joy. And that is when spiritual practices play their role. That's where spiritual practice of saying, come, let us go to Bethlehem and see Christ. Let's go to Bethlehem and focus on Christ. Or let us, to put it in another way, let us go to Bethlehem and see afresh the one indisputable and tangible sign, which is Jesus born as a baby. The historical, tangible, and indisputable fact that tells us that we can be joyful. And that is that Christ has been born as a baby in the form of human beings. That is really the foundation of our joy. And if you think of it that way, regardless of where our circumstances are, we are all in the same plane. Regardless of whether we have or we don't have, our foundation of joy is ultimately in Christ. That is really the only ultimate foundation of joy. And so we are all in the same plane in that sense. We are all needing Christ. We are all in need of Christ's redemption. But going to Bethlehem and seeing Christ is also important in another sense. And let me just use the picture that's given in Isaiah. In Isaiah, the prophet says, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. Going to Jesus, going to Bethlehem and seeing Jesus as a baby, metaphorically speaking, that's not just to therapeutically heal our low esteem or to make us feel a little better. In fact, the Bible tells us that going to see Jesus is itself the path of salvation. Going to witness Jesus, to focus on Jesus, is itself the path of salvation. And so imagine that you are walking in darkness, pretty much like the picture that I've shared here. And just like Isaiah says, you're walking in darkness. You don't know where's up. You don't know where's down. You don't know where's north, south, east, west. You're walking wherever you feel like. And then you see light. And when you see light, you know where to go. You know that's the direction that you want to follow. And I imagine it in the same way. Jesus is born as a baby, and that is the direction that we want to go to. We want to follow that. We know where to follow. We know what to follow. And the light, see, I think we all know what light is. Even indoor plants, we lean towards the light. And I think we are That's the logical thing to do as well. The true light of the world has come, and the right thing to do is to go and see him. The right thing to do is to go and follow that light and believe that it will lead us out of this darkness. So coming back to the shepherds, I'm always intrigued when I try and imagine the shepherds. They have seen all of that. They've seen Jesus. They've talked to Mary and Joseph, and it's over. Now they're going home. They're rejoicing and going home. I always imagine them going to sleep and waking up the next morning. And I just wonder, how did they feel? In my imagination, they wake up, everything's the same, right? Nothing has changed for them. They are still probably poorer at least. They are still working the same jobs, but everything has changed. They are filled with joy because even though nothing has changed, everything has changed. They have seen the Lord in the form of a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes. They have seen him lying in a manger. Now they've known that redemption and salvation has arrived in this world. And he has come in actuality, not just in abstraction or in thoughts that only the rabbis could grapple with, but in actual human form, in the form of a person that they could talk to, in the form of a person that they could befriend and follow and relate to. And I think that's why I believe that they would have been filled with joy. And I think that is the joy of Christmas that the shepherds and Simeon and Anna experienced, knowing that there's redemption and they can dare to be joyful. There's incarnation and that joy can be a reality. And it is our prayer that as we celebrate or look forward to Christmas, may the light of the world fill your hearts, your homes, and your world with that same joy and with that same hope.